From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in February 2011. First Lady Michelle Obama had kicked off a new campaign to promote breastfeeding, and that included support for a new law that makes breast pumps tax deductible. This being America, even breastfeeding became political. Celebrity Sarah Palin complained, quote, "It's no wonder that Michelle Obama is telling everybody you better breastfeed your baby because the price of milk is so high." Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann said, quote, "To think that the government has to go out and buy my breast pump. You want to talk about nanny state? I think we just got a new definition," end quote. Of course, the First Lady wasn't asking for the government to buy breast pumps, and it's possible that Ms. Bachmann isn't aware that tax deductible means simply having a lower total taxable income. It might save 30 or 40% on the item, but we digress, of course. The question is, what should government do in regards to breastfeeding? How available should government make it? And speaking more broadly, what should employers do? What do we seem to have sort of an issue with breastfeeding, especially in public? Why is there a controversy every other month, it seems, in this country? We welcome two guests for the hour. Carrie Andrews is the minority leader of the Monroe County Legislature. Carrie, nice to have you back.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Diane Cassidy is a certified lactation consultant and a board member of the new nonprofit organization called Parent Village. Nice to see you.
Thank you.
What is Parent Village, by the way?
Parent Village is a brand new nonprofit organization that supports really parenting, you know, just new parents that need a lot of support, finding out where their resources are, kind of the idea of it takes a village to parent. So I am on that board. I am with Rochester Area Birth Network as well, and I also have my own consulting business with lactation. I teach a lot of classes, and I see a lot of new parents, and so very involved in the parenting breastfeeding world.
Well, thank you for being here, and let's start our conversation with Ms. Andrews. What are Democrats proposing for Monroe County, Carrie?
Yeah, thanks. Last week, we introduced a proposal that would have the county create a designated room in each of its buildings that would be available for women who need to breastfeed and for lactation purposes. The idea behind it is just that a special room be designated, not mandated, certainly. Women legally can breastfeed anywhere if they want to. But this room would be established so that when county employees return to work or any member of the general public wants to come in, they would have a designated space to be used. It would be private. It could be a small room. Would have to be able to lock from the inside and have a clean space and a comfortable chair for pumping and for breastfeeding.
Could be decided this week? What's going on this week?
Yes, it could be decided this week. The proposal is coming before the county legislature's agenda charter committee, and that meets this coming Wednesday evening at 5:30.
Why do you feel the need for this kind of legislation? Like you said, the law, well, actually, let's back up and let's talk about the law. The law protects moms who need to breastfeed, right?
New York state law, yes, it does say that women can breastfeed anywhere they'd like to. There's also a law that allows employees or nursing mothers, when they return to work, to ask for a space and to be provided with unpaid lactation breaks during their day upon returning to work. So that law is on the books. In learning about this issue in Monroe County, in fact, when we tried to access this information to find out what the county policy was about breastfeeding, there's no mention of it in the county employee handbook. When we went on the county's website under the human resources policies, there was no mention for employees about their right to ask for breaks. And in speaking with a woman who had just come back to work and was a county employee after having a child, she didn't receive any notice about her right to ask for these unpaid breaks and for a space. So we feel certainly if that law is on the books, that's the bare minimum. And we have an opportunity here to do far more than that, and to promote breastfeeding as a public health issue and to make the space available not only for county employees but also for members of the general public.
Do you expect opposition on this?
I am always optimistic and hopeful that the Democratic ideas will pass through the legislature. To date, I haven't received any support from the Republican legislators, so I can't say I'm incredibly optimistic that it will pass, and I think it is likely there will be some opposition, but I haven't heard anything formally yet.
And if there's opposition, perhaps it's that they'll say the law already covers this. Well, and often you hear when new legislation is proposed regarding anything, if there's legislation that already deals with it, do you need more of it? What do you say to that?
I think we have an opportunity to promote breastfeeding as a public health issue and to increase awareness of its health benefits for both nursing mothers and for babies. And I think for women returning to work, there's a lot of data out there that shows that women, when they return to work after having children, well, if they're able to continue breastfeeding and there aren't hurdles in their way from doing so, they'll take fewer sick days, they miss work less often, their children are healthier, there's more productivity in the workplace, and higher morale. So we have a chance here to do more than just the bare minimum for Monroe County. And by promoting breastfeeding, we could really move this forward as an issue for our community.
We'd like to hear from our listeners on this conversation. If you want to weigh in, not only on this proposal, but the broader issue. Have you had issues with breastfeeding, either in your workplace or in public? Do you have issues with others who engage in that? You can join the conversation. The phone number is toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. We're going to get to some of your comments already coming in via Twitter, at Evan Dawson on Twitter, and we're going to get to some of that in just a second. But one more point on possible opposition, Carrie, is that if you're designating certain spaces in county buildings for this, does that prevent the spaces? Is this utilizing space that needs to be used for other things?
Well, the proposal I submitted gives the county executive wide latitude in establishing which rooms are used and how much space is taken up. And there's even a provision in there that says that if a room can't be located in a building, we'll just continue to make an ongoing effort and just comply with the law as New York State requires. So there's it's not universalist. If it's not possible to find space, or if we have a building where the public doesn't access the building and there aren't any employees, then we're not going to mandate a room be provided in that building. The idea here is just to make an attempt and to locate as many rooms as possible in as many buildings as possible to be used for breastfeeding.
Whenever there is new legislation proposed, there's sort of, it's always interesting to see the public feedback. Some things seem rather important and get very little feedback. Other things get quite emotional. What have you heard on this issue?
Well, we've heard some positive responses and a little bit of confusion about what the actual proposal is. I did want to just reiterate that the proposal does not mandate that women use these rooms, certainly. As we've talked about, women can breastfeed anywhere they want. So the idea is just to have a designated room in each building that is accessible for members of the public and for women. But we have heard from a lot of new mothers, that this is something that is interesting and is an idea to promote breastfeeding.
Well, let me bring in Diane Cassidy again. If you're just joining us, Carrie Andrews is the leader, the minority leader in the Monroe County Legislature. Diane Cassidy, among other things, is a certified lactation consultant. And you've been listening to Carrie describe the reasons behind this. What do you think?
I think that it's a long time coming. I really do. We have a lot of women in the workforce now. A lot of women that are breastfeeding, a lot more women that are breastfeeding. It is recognized as a public health issue. There's a lot of support behind this as far as, you know, nationwide, worldwide. And we really, to support it is a great thing. And to be able to offer to women, okay, you're coming back to work. It's a very hard thing to go back to work after you've just had a baby. It's very, very hard to make that transition from being at home, recovering with your newborn, and then going back to work. Sometimes as early as 6 weeks, that's a huge transition. And I work with a lot of women that make that transition. And one of their biggest obstacles is, how am I going to continue to support milk for my baby? Or how am I going to continue to give milk to my baby when I go back to work? And to already know they have a space available to them and they have support from their employer is a huge, huge benefit. And for Monroe County to lead the way and promote that would make it easier for so many other businesses to do that locally.
Just anecdotally, Diane, how have things changed when it comes to women going back to work and having designated space with their employer? How many employers are really sort of out front about this kind of thing?
If they already have a room designated, and there are several places locally that have a room designated, they are very upfront about it, very, very welcoming, you know, really have gone out of their way to make this available for their employees so their employees can come back.
Do most employers do that?
I would would say not most. No, there's a few that are really, really good about it. You know, I do a lot of prenatal breastfeeding classes. Mm-hmm. And we talk about this extensively. Going back to work is one of the biggest things that women are concerned about. How am I going to make this work? How am I going to do this? And when I asked, do you have a place designated for you? Probably 50-50 in the classes will say, yes, my workplace does already have a space. They already have a place designated for me. I'm already set up and I'm comfortable with that. And then you have some people that weren't even aware that this is a law, that they have to be provided with this. So it's usually one extreme or the other.
Carrie mentioned the unpaid lactation breaks. Mm-hmm. Unpaid. Should they be paid?
You know what? They really don't necessarily need to be paid. And one of the things that I tell my new mothers is that if you're an 8-hour workday, which is, you know, really what you're dealing with here, an 8-hour workday, one break in the morning, one break in the afternoon, and one time at lunch is plenty. That's enough. And that's by law what they should have by labor standards anyway. So we're not saying that they're taking off every 20 minutes to go and pump. Mm-hmm. It's not excessive. It shouldn't be excessive. They should have a couple out, you know, every 3 or 4 hours they might need to pump, and that's all that they would need according to labor standards anyway. They should be getting those breaks legally.
So when it comes to the current law there, you don't see a need for a change there?
No, I think it's okay.
Okay.
I think that's
I want to read a comment that came in, and again, we've got ways you can communicate with us. You can email me, you can jump on Twitter or on Facebook, and we have a comment that came in from Jack who says, if women want to breastfeed, they ought to gear their schedule toward it. That might mean sacrificing work, sorry to say, and I certainly don't want to see women using a breast pump when I'm trying to get work done or eating lunch at the office.
Well, he probably wouldn't need to see it. It's not something that they're going to do. A lot of women do choose to make the sacrifice to stay home. A lot of women do, but really, in this day and age, that's really hard to do. It's a very, very hard thing to do. But they should be able to have that right to offer milk for their babies. It shouldn't be a punishment that because they chose to go back to work, they can no longer offer breast milk for their baby.
Let me ask Carrie Andrews what you think. You flinched a little when I read that comment from Jack.
Well, it's certainly not my point of view. I think we should do whatever we can to equalize the playing field for men and women at work, certainly. Women, biologically, obviously, are the ones who bear children. And making that decision to do that and then having to fit in work and family is something that most women deal with. And so I think exactly the opposite, that we should facilitate having children and working and making those fit together into women's lives. And so some of that comment, I think, I think some women do still feel uncomfortable breastfeeding in public. And
because of things like that?
And because of comments like that, it goes a long way to exacerbate those feelings.
And I see the phone starting to light up. If you want to join the conversation, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Diane, are we immature about this issue as a country? Are we getting to be a little bit more understanding of just the vital role breastfeeding plays? And, you know, I started the hour by mentioning that we have a pretty sexualized culture to begin with, and yet we seem to freak out about breastfeeding, of all things, which is the least sexual thing you can think of.
It is, but it's still recognized by a huge majority as being very sexualized. And it's unfortunate because it is not. It is not at all. And society puts it in that category. And then labels it as nobody wants to see that. But we all know, I mean, we see the ads for lingerie. We see, movies and TV shows that are very, very sexualized now. And nobody says a thing about that. Nobody says a thing about it. So where breastfeeding is something that is bettering our society, it's making our children healthier, it's better for mothers, it's better for babies, and that is something that we're just kind of not even acknowledging. And it's unfortunate. So we really see it as we're recognizing more now. You know, it was several years ago, 30 years ago or so, it was kind of pushed under the carpet, and now it's really being recognized more so. Surgeon General has made their stance on breastfeeding. A lot of different organizations are making their stance on breastfeeding, American Academy of Pediatrics, World Health Organization, the CDC. But then you still have people that are like, ugh, I just can't wrap my head around it.
Mm-hmm. And well, let's hold that thought for 1 second. Let's grab our first call. This is John in Hamlin. Go ahead, John.
Hi. Let me just pull over here. I just wanted to say that...
John, do not hurt yourself just to call the program. I appreciate the call.
But go ahead. I'm all set. I just want to let you know that I have three children. They're age 27, 23, and 21. And they were all breastfed back in late 80s, early 90s. And, there were times where people would give my wife a look or something. But, it was never anybody coming up to us and said, don't do that. But I think all my children benefited from it. And look at what, stuff like, they've done over in other countries where they get women not to breastfeed and the problems that had with formulas and stuff. I think it's a healthy thing and people should just accept it because it's the way, women were designed for this purpose, really. When they can have babies, they should be allowed to breastfeed. It's healthy for them.
Well, John, I know you're going to get a lot of support here, but you also made an important comment here, John, and I want to ask Diane to respond to this. He said his wife was never approached by anybody directly, but occasionally there was a look.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's part of what Carrie described as the lack of comfort women can feel, right?
Right. The lack of comfort. And sometimes it's not even out in public. Sometimes it's your own family. You're at a family gathering and people are looking at you like, what are you doing? Because they're not comfortable seeing it. And when people aren't comfortable seeing it, they make you feel uncomfortable with it. And I have definitely, John's wife was very lucky and very fortunate that people did not come right up to her and say, you can't do that here. Because we are still hearing from people, and I do get this information a lot, where people will come right up to somebody sitting in a mall or sitting in a park or sitting somewhere out in the public and they'll say, what are you doing? You can't do that here. At a bus stop, I've had mothers call me from the bus stop saying, I am legally in my right to breastfeed, right? Because I just had somebody come up to me and tell me that they were going to go get the police. And that's unfortunate. It really is unfortunate that they have to feel like they're doing something wrong when they're just nourishing their baby.
They've actually had people talk about getting the police.
Yes. I have had those calls, yeah.
And obviously, you tell them right away. But
you're legally in the right to be breastfeeding.
Which is sort of an amazing thing to have to talk about. But at the same time, it's one thing to say, okay, you're legally within the right. But it's another for women to feel like they can do it without being harassed. That's two different things.
Exactly, yes, exactly.
I'm just sort of amazed by that. And I go back to, again, I wonder if some of what John sort of referenced or what our comment from Jack Online comes from, and we're starting to see more. I'll see if I can grab a few more from Twitter here as well. But if you're just joining us, Carrie Andrews is here, the minority leader of Democrats in the Monroe County Legislature, and her proposal, well, I say her proposal, the Democrats' proposal.
Correct, yes.
I want to give you all of the credit here. Comes up again Wednesday night. And for our listeners who missed the beginning of it, Carrie, kind of go over the details again and what you're proposing.
Sure. What we proposed is that the county, in each of the buildings that it has, create a designated room for breastfeeding and for lactation purposes so that women who return to work after having a child or members of the general public have a room that they know will be available for breastfeeding or for pumping. And in thinking about how this room would actually be used and thinking about some of the county buildings, I mean, we do have two buildings that are used for Department of Human Services where we have very high traffic buildings and we have people who at times can wait hours in line to reach their caseworker and social worker. And so having designated spaces and buildings like that could be very helpful for families and for women who are trying to access services that they're entitled to.
Terry online writes that legally can does not mean the same as should. Women should respect our wishes when it comes to what makes people comfortable. So, Diane, again, what Terry is saying is, yes, women can breastfeed legally.
Mm-hmm.
But are there certain places that it should be more discreet or you should think about not doing it? What do you tell your new moms?
I tell them to do what makes them comfortable. You know, I really do. And I have some women that are very, very comfortable breastfeeding in public and some women that are not. And that's okay. If they are comfortable with it, then that's fine. If not, there should be a room where they can go to if they are out in public. It should be their option. But the idea behind this is if they want to breastfeed their baby, which is their right, and if they want to, they should be able to either do it in public without feeling that harassment or without feeling like they're being judged, or there should be a room available to them where they can just go and breastfeed if that's what makes them comfortable. I can speak from my personal experience with my children. I was not comfortable breastfeeding in public. And this was, my oldest is 13. And I wasn't comfortable with it. Now I would be, because I know so much more and I'd be really proud of it. I'd be really proud of the fact that I could do this for my babies. But when I was out, I would go into the car, I'd go into a dressing room. And that wasn't necessarily ideal. It wasn't, because there was no other place to go.
So you do think we're seeing change?
I do think we are seeing change, absolutely. But I think it should be up to the woman. I don't think she should say, is it okay if I breastfeed my baby here? Because that's ridiculous. Nobody else has to ask to do anything like that.
Once again, Carrie, I see you nodding. Carrie's supposed to be the legislator. She's just talking about policy, but once in a while she can't help, I know, jump in. You agree, don't you?
Oh, I agree with Diane wholeheartedly. And the law is very clear here. This is the right women have to breastfeed in private or in public, wherever they're comfortable. And that's what the bottom line is here. And clearly, I think even from the first few comments we've had so far, this shows the real need here to promote an understanding of breastfeeding and its health values or health benefits, mm-hmm. and to do something in the county where we have an opportunity. So to perhaps break down some of these thoughts or problems that some people have with it still.
Before we get back to, in fact, let's do this. We'll get to the phones, and then I want to get to another question online from Twitter is on the law itself. So we're going to get to that legal question next, but let's grab Bernard in Fairport. Thanks for calling, Bernard. Go ahead.
Yeah, my comment is anybody who's uncomfortable with breastfeeding should get mental support from government. It doesn't seem to me that you should have to pass a law that allows a human natural way of living. You shouldn't be able to enforce it. I mean, do we have to have laws about having bathrooms and so on and so forth? So, you know, it just seems to me that I don't understand why we have to pass a law to allow this or to enable it. What's the matter with our society that, you know, we have a problem with something that's good for children and good for families?
Exactly.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Bernard. Diane?
Exactly. I mean, and that's a lot of when we did the press conference last week, I was just talking to Carrie about this. I had a couple of friends of mine there, you know, for support. One who is currently pregnant with her first baby and thinking about what do I do when I go back to work. And another friend who whose youngest is just a little over a year and spent the better part of a year pumping in her car. And she is somebody who's on the road a lot for her job. She's in early intervention. She goes to homes. She goes to daycares. She goes to schools. And if there was rooms in the county where she could just drop in if she needed to, that would have helped her so much, so much. So she was there too. And both of them said to me, what is the problem? Why do we have to actually promote this and have a press conference about it and put it out there as a support for the law?
Yeah, I think Bernard's question is obviously rhetorical, but at the same time, Carrie, you do feel like we're not at a point where Bernard's sentiment is universal, so you do need legislation. At least that's what I'm getting from you on this.
Oh, absolutely. I feel that we definitely need legislation in the county. We have an opportunity to do more, to introduce something that would increase access to locations for breastfeeding and for pumping for the county workforce, because as I went through a little while ago, it's not really well known by women when they return to work at the county even itself what their rights are. That's not promoted internally. And so we have an opportunity to fix that and to promote it internally. And then for the general public, just to do more. There are a lot of laws there where there's a minimum threshold that a government can meet or an employer can meet. But when we actually believe in something and we want to encourage breastfeeding or have more women see or benefit from the health benefits and children as well, then as government we have a chance to step up to the plate and institute policies that get us to move in that direction.
And along those lines about going back to work, Lisa on Twitter was asking, I'm pregnant now. What should I ask my boss about having space when I'm ready to come back to work on this issue. So if she was working with you, Diane, again, Diane Cassidy is a lactation consultant. If she's coming to you with this question, what kind of conversation should she have with her boss?
She should talk to her boss in advance and ask, you know, what are my options for coming back to work? I understand by the law that there should be a room available to me. There should be a space available to me where I can pump in private and offer, you know, and keep this milk for my baby. What do we have here that I can do? And either her employer will either know exactly what to do or will say, okay, I didn't know this. Let me do a little bit of research and find where we can have this space. It can be a difficult conversation to bring up. It really can, especially, you know, in this day and age where employment can be hard to come by. And if they're afraid that this could make things harder for them at work, it can be a difficult conversation. But women should know that this is their right. So they should, and if they need help with this, we know how to help them with this too. So I want the moms to know that they are never by themselves in this either.
Yeah.
That we can help get them that legislature, they can, the information that they need, if they need a copy of the law to show to their employer or whatever that they need to do. But definitely find out in advance before they go out on maternity leave. Do you have some place for me to pump when I come back?
This is Dan in Brighton. Go ahead, Dan.
A few years ago, I came across a study from the province of Quebec where they figured out that if they had, if every woman in the province breastfed, it would save them a huge amount of money in medical costs. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to put forth that the state of New York or maybe the federal government should pay women to breastfeed the same amount that they would save, and then we would save all this money. And I'll hang up and listen to what you all have to say.
Dan, thanks for the call. Let's start with Diane. It's an interesting idea.
It would save millions of dollars. Millions of dollars. For babies to be breastfed.
And let's talk about how. Why do you say that?
Well, first of all, in healthcare costs alone, just because breastfeeding and the research has shown for back as far as we have researched it, that breastfed babies are healthier as far as, you know, less respiratory problems, less ear infections. And those are some of the biggest reasons why babies are seeing their doctor in the first year or two of life. So that alone is going to save cost. Cost for health insurance. Those babies are on their parents' health insurance. Those health insurance costs for those doctor's appointments. Medical medicines, you know, for these ailments, that alone. We're also talking about how much money is put into WIC for offering formula. There's a lot of money that is put into that. That alone, if we had more women that were breastfeeding and not taking that, that would save a huge amount of money as well.
So your point is, we're already spending this money.
Mm-hmm.
So you think Dan's point is,
I think,
is it a good one?
Dan, from what I could understand, Dan was saying, let's give the women the money.
Yo, like, I think what he's saying is, when you're ready to deliver and figure out what the average cost is that we spend for the medical problems and other things that come up with kids who are not breastfed, give women the money, pay them if they are willing to breastfeed,
mm-hmm.
pay them the difference, and therefore you guarantee a healthier child, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Now, look, I'm not prepared in terms of research and background to go into a long discussion over one of the more recent and controversial studies that came out of Columbus. I assume Diane saw it. The notion is that this Columbus group, and I think they're more sociologists doing the research than doctors, but their research found that long term, we're not talking about age 0 to 2 to 3, mm-hmm. we're talking about long term, that the easiest way to tell if a child is going to be in good shape economically, socially, mentally, is not breastfeeding. It's really how they're raised in terms of socioeconomic status. And they looked at children from the same family, one child breastfed, one child on formula, and those kids had very little difference. And their point was, a child raised one way, and hopefully raised well with attentive parents, that's much more important than breastfeeding long term than formula. And again, we're not talking about short term, we're talking about long term.
I know this study.
Yeah,
and I looked into this study greatly.
And I apologize to my listeners because Dan's call brought this up to mind. Mm-hmm. We're not going to go into it long term. You can look it up, and maybe what we'll do is we'll spend a future hour on it, try to delve into it in more detail. But essentially what they were saying was they tried to take away the variables. They took one child from one family breastfed, another child, same family, same mom, not breastfed, and long term they did not find real differences.
Right, and the difference behind that, and I'll make it as quick as possible because I know we're not, because really we could...
I know. I apologize for this tangent.
But what that study did not specify was how long was that baby breastfed? How long was that first child breastfed for? Because we know that when children are breastfed, yes, any amount of breast milk is good. However, the longer you breastfeed, the benefits are greater. So was that first child that they said was breastfed, was that baby breastfed one feeding in the hospital and therefore labeled as it was a breastfed baby? Or was it a baby that was breastfed for, you know, 3 or 4 months and then comparing it against this other child? That was not specified in this study. All they said was, oh yeah, one was breastfed, one was not. But we don't know how long was the baby breastfed for, how often was the baby breastfed, how much breast milk was this baby actually offered before they, you know, did this study. So there's a lot of flaws to that study that was not... put out there.
Yeah, and it seems to me at least logical that breastfeeding, even if we're not looking long term, if you're looking 0 to 2 to 3, mm-hmm. you know, as good as formula has become, it's still not, you know, it's not 100% what the natural process is.
Exactly.
So, yeah. You know, whether it's allergies or other infections, etc. But back to Dan's point, how do you quantify when infections and doctor's visits become due to a child not being breastfed? That's what I think is probably impossible to quantify, isn't it?
It probably would be very hard to determine. I mean, we know that, you know, from studies that were done, that babies that are visiting the doctors more often or kids within the first couple of years are, we obviously know, you can look in and you can see, okay, those babies were not breastfed. And you see those kids more.
Yeah. Well, fortunately for Carrie Andrews, who is in studio, she is not a federal legislator. She doesn't have to think about these kind of questions. She deals on the local level. So your response to Dan would be purely opinion-based. But is it realistic to try to legislate actual costs? I mean, it seems to me there would be a lot of variables to try to sort through to do something like that.
Well, from my understanding, there probably are a lot of variables, and Dan has an interesting idea, certainly. But at this point, what I'm comfortable, you know, just really talking about and promoting certainly is local efforts that we can undertake.
She's looking at me going, don't come to me with this.
But I would say one thing about, because he mentioned Quebec, and I did want to give credit to when this idea first came to me locally, at least. I had a meeting with Diane and with Carol Mulligan, who's another lactation consultant, and Gary Puttup, and they brought this concept to me of doing more within the county to promote breastfeeding and to increase awareness of it, as well as access and the space and the room idea. And Gary told a story about traveling in Montreal, in Quebec, and seeing on the doors of many government buildings the international symbol for breastfeeding sign, which is a blue symbol that's universally recognized for breastfeeding. And that was an indication that any member of the public could go in there and that there was a room available for this purpose. And so we chatted about that and talked about whether or not that was something that we might be able to do here in the county.
How many Americans would recognize that symbol, you think?
Oh, boy. I'm not sure. Diane, what do you think?
I think it would be pretty well recognized.
Yeah?
Yeah,
okay.
I do.
Well, we'll see on that score. We also have a comment from Angie online. Angie said that she and her husband both worked, and her husband advised her to breastfeed until she went back to work. And she looks back and wonders if that was a mistake. I think, you know, again, Carrie, part of what it seems that your caucus is doing is trying to make sure women feel comfortable working. That, you know, again, it's 2014. It shouldn't be like, hey, it's great that women are working, moms are working. But to some degree, again, we're hearing from women during the show that there is a stress for being able to feel like you can go back to work and get into a normal schedule again in terms of work.
Sure. I mean, what we're looking to do is just choose one way that we have some control over, which we as a county could pass this legislation, and just try to break down one hurdle so that when women in the county come back to work, or when members of the public are waiting for a county service or in line somewhere within a county building, they know that there's a room available. Just break down one tiny little hurdle. We don't get to control a lot of other things, but we feel this would move us in the right direction of easing accessibility to breastfeeding lactation.
And Diane, I don't know Angie, I don't know her husband. I'm assuming her husband wasn't trying to do anything harmful with the proposal to, hey, breastfeed until you go back to work. But what would you say if a mom came to you and says, hey, my husband, we both work, my husband thinks breastfeed until you go back to work?
And I would probably, my first thing would to say to that would be, why? What's the idea behind that? What's the idea of no longer breastfeeding once you get back to work? Maybe he feels like it will be too stressful for her, and he's trying to ease that
burden.
Maybe
he's trying to actually
do a
nice thing for her. But
if it's something that she wants to do, then she should do it. You know, I mean, women carry a lot of guilt over mothering. And if women want to be able to provide that milk for their baby, and they're struggling with, I have to return to work, I have to have this family, I got to find daycare, there's a lot of variables there. And like Carrie said, if we can just take this one step and take that part off the table for them to not have to be so concerned about it, then they won't have to worry about, oh, geez, what am I going to do when I go back to work? How am I going to possibly do this? How am I going to manage it all? I mean, it was great that now women don't have to be concerned about, how am I going to afford a breast pump? How am I going to make that work? How are we going to do this? That piece has been taken care of. So now the next logical thing is to make this doable for them.
We're going to close the hour in just a moment by taking a break and shifting gears and coming back and focusing a little bit on the Jazz Fest. And I'm happy to be back at work this week after a week off. It's an exciting week at WXXI in Rochester. So let's close with some thoughts from our guests. Carrie Andrews, last thought from you regarding this issue. What do you want people to know about what's coming up Wednesday night?
Well, Wednesday night's our county legislature meeting of the Agenda Charter Committee. It's the first opportunity for this legislation to be discussed in the legislature. It needs to pass that committee in order to be considered by the full legislature. So what I'd really love to say is, if anybody is interested in coming to speak to the legislature about this, then they can call 753-1950 to call the clerk's office and sign up to speak at 5:30 on Wednesday night.
And Diane Cassidy, some closing thoughts from you just on the issue more broadly.
Gosh, that's...
You don't have a half hour.
I know you.
I
just, you know, definitely come out and support it. If you feel like it's something that you want to support, this can be a big thing. You know, I mean, Monroe County has a health department, and lots of this could really change a lot of things for our working mothers. And you know, the women are 70% of the workforce now, and it's a big deal. It really is to give them this opportunity.
And it sounds like working moms who we've been hearing from this hour, don't be afraid to ask questions about the law if you have them, right?
Exactly. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Seek out a lactation consultant if you want help with that piece, because it can be pretty intimidating to walk up to your employer and be like, okay, this is what I need from you.
Yeah.
So definitely know what your rights are as a new mom, and look for help with that if you need it.
Diane, thanks for taking the time to join us.
Thank you.
Carrie Andrews, nice to see you again.
Thank you.
Carrie Andrews from the Monroe County Legislature, Diane Cassidy, a lactation consultant, joining us in studio. And short break now. Coming back, and a focus on Jazz Fest as it continues here in Rochester. I'm Evan Dawson, happy to be back on Connections on member-supported public radio. Coming up in our second hour, GMOs. What do we need to know about how our food is made? New York State considered a new law that would require foods made with GMOs to be labeled, but that bill stalled. Now there's a growing movement to educate consumers, and Wegmans is getting involved. Answering your questions about GMOs coming up in our next hour on Connections with Evan Dawson.
I'm Robin Young. From Ukraine to Thailand to New York, do people have a fascination with electing billionaires to high office?
There's this kind of collective wealth fantasy that if we only elect this billionaire, some of his expertise at creating wealth will actually spread to us.
Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's coming up at 2 o'clock right here on your public radio station, WXXI and WEOS.
I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome back to Connections. Jazz singer and pianist Diane Schur performs this week at the Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. She's going to be appearing Wednesday at Kilbourne Hall for a couple of shows, 6 o'clock and 10 o'clock. And recently, WXXI's Randy Gorbman talked to Diane Schur about her career and her new album.
It's wonderful. It's marvelous that you should care for me.
you've been doing this singing and playing since you were very, very young, right?
Yeah, I started performing at age 9 professionally.
And had you come out of a very musical family?
Pretty much. My dad played piano by ear and so on. So my grandmother used to be a music teacher and so on. So, yeah, I would say that.
You, for folks who don't know, you've been blind since birth, and I guess it certainly changes a person's perspective in different ways. But did it make you think more interested in music? I mean, did you spend a lot of time listening to the radio or music or those kinds of things when you were small?
Yeah, quite a bit. I listened to a lot of different things, on radio, news programs, and. As well as a lot of different kinds of music.
When you, as you kind of grew into your own, so to speak, as a performer, obviously a lot of your music I think of as very, classic tunes, reinterpreting some standards. Is that your favorite type of jazz? I mean, has pretty much you've been looking at those kinds of tunes or have you been branching out into any other kinds of music that, you find really interesting?
Well, I did. Kind of like pop-oriented tunes, but I guess this is the interpretation of the Great American Songbook is kind of like what I've grown into for the past few years.
And do you have a preference for? I know I read one of your amongst many, I'm sure, musical heroes was Dinah Washington. That kind of style, kind of bluesy, jazzy kind of singer. What inspired you?
I would say so. Yeah, absolutely. Dinah Washington was my earliest influence.
What about these days? You've played with so many people. I mean, it's a list of just very notable people. I mean, looking at items in your bio, I mean, everybody from Quincy Jones to, of course, Stan Getz, Dizzy Gillespie, Stevie Wonder. I mean, so many people. Are you still performing with other folks as well? I mean, are you still looking for collaborations along the way?
Well, I'd like to collaborate again eventually, like I did with the Friends for Sure CD and with Stevie Wonder and Ray Charles and so on. Eventually I'd like to at some point get back to that, but I've got to concentrate on what is happening right now, which is the newest release.
Yeah, tell me about that, because I'm sure we'll be at least hopefully hearing some of that when you play here in Rochester at Kilbourne Hall on June 25th. Tell me about the name of that release and what it's about.
The name of the release is I Remember You. It's the title track. It's a tribute to Frank Sinatra and Stan Getz. And there are tunes that both of these men recorded. And since I knew them both pretty well, I figured I'd pay tribute to them.
Yeah. What are, if you can tell us, Dan, what are some of the tunes on that CD?
Starting with It's Wonderful, and then going into Nice and Easy, Watch What Happens, which is a Michel Legrand composition. Under My Skin, and then getting into some of the sadder songs of love, How Insensitive, written by Antonio Carlos Jobim, Here's That Rainy Day, Didn't We, that's a Jimmy Webb composition, and then the title track, I Remember You, and I Get Along Without You, that's a Hoagie Carmichael composition, followed by Ruth Bloom's Don't Worry About Me, and then Second Time Around, and then For Once in My Life. Those are the tunes in order.
Once in my life, I have someone who needs me, someone I've needed so long. For once, unafraid, I can go where life leads me. Somehow I know I'll be strong. For once, I can touch what my
Why are these, yeah, these two men, influences or musical heroes, start with Sinatra. I mean, has he just been a big influence? Had you ever met him before?
Yeah, I actually stayed at his house in 1988, did a fundraiser, replaced Liza Minnelli, who couldn't attend. And Quincy Jones was the conductor. And as a result of Frank Sinatra's and my friendship, he gave me a painting that he had done, and it hangs in my kitchen at my house. And then, of course, Stan Getz, you may or may not know, he brought me to the White House, heard me at the 1979 Monterey Jazz Festival, and we did three albums together, Deedles, Sure Thing, and Timeless. Those are the albums that we did. Timeless won a Grammy Award for Best Female Jazz Vocalist in 86.
Yeah, I wanted to mention folks who maybe follow you, or if they don't, they're not familiar with. Deedles is your nickname. Is that just something you've had for a long time?
Yeah, Deedles is my nickname, and my mother used to call me Deedle Babe when I was a kid, and so Deedles has been with me and probably will continue to be with me through life.
Let me ask you about performing, you know, without sight. Certainly there have been a lot of blind performers and jazz performers over the years, but I guess everybody approaches music differently anyway. When you prepare for concerts, do you read music via Braille? Do you read, you know, charts via Braille? How do you approach preparing? How does it make things different for you than it would for someone, you know, with sight?
Well, I used to read Braille music when I was a kid, but I don't anymore. It's by ear, the piano playing and everything. As far as tunes go, I get the lyrics in Braille, but not music.
And in terms of performing, obviously you perform with a lot of the names we just mentioned, but do you have a combo of musicians you play with, or regular folks that you're on the road with right now?
Yeah, I have a roster of great people that I work with. I'm working with some wonderful musicians that actually recorded the last release with me, and we have a lot of fun.
What about playing festivals like this one, and you know, the one in Rochester, the Xerox Rochester International Jazz Fest has really grown in recent years. I mean, we're getting, you know, many, many thousands of people week and a half or so that we have it. Do you like to play festivals? Do you have a preference? I know you're playing at Kilbourne Hall, which, you know, I got to tell you, it's got very nice acoustics, but certainly it is a, you know, relatively large venue. But do you have a preference on the kinds of places you play?
As long as, you know, people are receptive and they enjoy what we do, whether it's a concert hall or whether it's an intimate club, as long as the turnout is relatively good and people really enjoy what we do, that's what counts.
You know, right now, obviously, you've got this new CD to play on the road and promote. Is that pretty much what you're going to be doing over the next, let's say several months? Do you have any other particular venues you're going to be playing or going outside of the country to play, that kind of thing?
Probably be going to Italy in July and then Hungary and then back to Italy again. At least that's the close range kind of thing that we'll most likely be doing. Branching out, we're working on some venues in August, hopefully in Sweden and some other places. That hasn't been quite solidified. Hopefully it will be in the next few days.
Do you have a preference in terms of playing overseas? I mean, for years, I know because I've listened to jazz for a long time, but it hasn't always been, you know, let's face it, a real mass market for it in this country. And some jazz artists have said that they get a better reception overseas. But how do you find it with your music? Do you find that in the U.S. you get, you know, as good a reception as you do in some of those other countries?
Yeah, I think I get a fair shake here so far. I'm not ready to move to Europe, that's for sure.
Huh.
I know some jazz musicians have, but I'm not one of them.
As far as playing the festival here, should we obviously expect to see a lot of tunes off your new CD? Do you have, I don't know if you've got a set list yet. It's kind of early to ask that, but do you have things planned out as far as what you want to do?
Yeah, I basically do, and it's going to be a lot of the new stuff.
Well, thanks, Diane, for taking the time. I mean, it's a thrill to talk to you, and, you know, I'm sure we'll be talking about your performance when you're out here. But thanks once again for being here. You'll be at Kilbourne Hall June 25th, two shows, 6 and 10 p.m. here in Rochester at the Xerox Rochester International Jazz Fest. Diane, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Randy, for calling.
Let someone start believing in you. Let him hold out his hand. Let him touch you and watch what happens. Want someone who can look in your eyes and see into your heart. Let him find you and watch what happens. Cold. No, I won't believe your heart is cold.
Our thanks to Randy Gorbin, our news director at WXXI, for the interview with Diane Schur. And so much excitement about the Jazz Fest this week. We've got a lot coming up on this program. Tomorrow, we've got the great jazz pianist, and frankly, I don't know how to describe Vijay Iyer as anything more than just a jazz genius. And genius is actually the correct word. He won a genius grant. He's going to join us for the hour, and we're going to have a chance to explore his remarkable career, already remarkable career, a Fairport High School graduate who thought he would be a scientist and has since become one of the great jazz musicians of the current generation. He's in studio tomorrow at noon. He performs tonight, by the way, and tomorrow night as well. Tonight with a trio, tomorrow night solo. So great stuff there with Vijay Iyer tomorrow. And on Wednesday, Jamal Rossi joins us. So we've got a great lineup this week, and this is one of the most exciting times of the year in Rochester, isn't it? Just to see the energy. We've been seeing some of the pictures from Jazz Street every night. Feels like the weather has cooperated magnificently, and our friend Jack Garner has been talking about just the energy down there and the way things have evolved. This is a world-class destination now. I can't wait to talk tomorrow to Vijay Iyer and ask him about just Rochester's reputation on the national stage when it comes to festivals. This is about as good as it gets in terms of a big energy, big crowd size, while still being intimate. It's hard to capture all of those things, but Rochester's Jazz Festival is doing it, so great stuff there. Thanks to Randy Gorman for that. Short break now. We're coming back talking GMOs next. If you've been wondering about this debate about GMOs, what's in your food, what we ought to know about what's in your food, the state of Vermont, by the way, is out there forcing labeling laws. New York State considered labeling laws. We're going to talk all about GMOs next on member-supported public radio. Hope you'll join us for that.